I'm just dealing with concepts at the minute.
One of the questions is,
yeah.
So can we talk about IDL or ice cream theory on the side of the end user or the remix itself?
The end user's perception is very obviously that they have a domain name label in their language.
Yeah.
The only thing that I'm pointing out is that what makes that domain label appear to be in their language is external to the DNS.
Yeah.
What is stored in the DNS is a guess what?
Yeah.
Name, because the DNS doesn't allow for anything else. I'm not suggesting, Bruce, by the way, that this needs to be home now.
Yeah.
If slang you need for a resident sooner or later, it's going to cause not just a bit of terminological distress. It's going to gunk something up big time.
I understand that. My worry or my question would be, so what should be the language of the DNS console? Would it be the language that is accurate from for the technical community, or the language that is suitable to the end user?
Okay, so Uncle Carl, we do need to come up with some language that we're going to use consistently in the GNSR, and I'll work with Gary on what that language should be, so that we keep the technical experts happy, as well as have it vaguely understandable to those that are not. My attempt at 1 and 2 here was to make it vaguely understandable to those that are not.
It actually does go straight to the heart of registry and registrar practice.
Yes.
Because what essentially happens is that I want this word in my language as a domain name, and it is encoded into something that I don't know or care about. But then something changes, and it is encoded into something different. Do I have a right to what that different thing is? What exactly am I buying at the registrar end?
Yes.
And there's a clear distinction between that and the DNS.
Exactly.
That's the point I'm
making. Okay, so that's kind of the two underlying principles, and I guess what we're trying to do in the terms of reference we have for IDNs is we're sort of saying, okay, as an initial task, we need to plan and make sure we're interacting with the timeline for our work that fits into the timeline of the technical tests. And we interact with the other groups. I'm hoping Tina and Carrie can just update us with what the technical tests are currently planned to be and what their timeline is. In general, what we're trying to do is document any policy issue that we identify that needs to be harmonised across both CCs and GTLDs. In selection criteria, we're taking into account the work that we've done on new GTLDs to develop modified or additional criteria for the inclusion of these labels, and in allocation methods, similar thing. Is there anything different we need to do with allocation when we take into account IDNs? And the same for the contract stuff. So essentially, it's taking the work that we've just been discussing in the past 2 days, and the IDN work may develop some additional material that's specific to IDNs, but it's worth reflecting at this stage whether the work we've currently done, in other words, what we're hoping will be part of Section 1 here, that the rules that we are creating at the high level for new GTLDs are going to be consistent. The work we've done so far that's probably most relevant to this topic is this issue about looking for the string, doing string checks and how we do those. So, I guess this is for the benefit of Carrie and Tina that weren't here this morning. But yesterday we talked about having in a new TLD application there is a string check process. The staff can check that string against a set of criteria and can gauge advice if they need to. There's a concept that's a public comment phase, and the public comments need to relate to those criteria. In other words, you can't just say, I don't like the person that's running this string, it's not their role. And then a staff think, based on their analysis and based on public comments, that there's going to be an issue with a particular string, that would be put to some panel of experts with appropriate background that relates to that issue. The string criteria that has come up so far for new GTLDs is that the string should not be confusingly similar to an existing string, And confusingly similar means there's a likelihood of confusion on the part of the relevant public. The string must not infringe the legal rights of any third party. That's kind of the shorthand text of stuff that's in the registrar agreement at the moment regarding registering domain names. The string should not cause technical issues, and there's examples of some that might, like if you had a .exe at the root level, or you had .localhost at the root level. This text in red is basically a placeholder for the stuff we need to work out with input from the public policy side, that string should not be nasty in some way. And the string should not be a reserved word, and there are some RFCs that identify things that are not appropriate for domain names. Now, naturally, the work on IDS might add stuff to this, but hopefully it doesn't change that list. So you'd expect there might be a DE and F saying, you know, that there's various requirements that come out of the IDN work. Under dispute resolution, there's a dispute resolution process using independent arbitrators where existing registry operators could challenge a decision regarding whether or not a new string is confusingly similar to an existing string. And if that's challenged, then the string wouldn't be able to be registered. And there'd also be a dispute resolution process similar to what we have for UDRP, where an existing trademark holder could challenge a string. So that's kind of what the work is probably most relevant at the moment. I think for this discussion. So I'm interested, I guess, just to hand the floor across perhaps to Tina or Karen, whoever's got the voice at the moment, just to sort of update us on recent developments with respect to the technical tests and the sort of timeline and the work that's going on in the Presence Advisory Committee. If you want to use the projector, you might want to come up here.
No, that's okay. I actually don't have any slides for you guys because I didn't exactly know how the agenda was going to go.
That's right, neither did we.
So I think an update from my side on the technical test and how that is going, and then an update on the revision of the guidelines, which might be closer to all of the policy work than the technical test is. But before I do, I just want to understand 100%, you know, I can see that you have these kinds of criteria from your GTLDs and the topic of IDNs might add to it, but then does that mean that you're going to, they're running a little bit separately, right? But they have to be, jointly. Well, there has to be some hooks between the two of them, also because of what Karen mentioned earlier. So
just to give you a sort of flavor for that, we discussed that a little bit today as well.
Okay.
We're probably envisaging that there would be a round, and the round probably wouldn't include IDNs in the first round. That would be sort of introducing TLDs based on what we've been talking about. As the IDN work progresses, then the additional rules that relate to IDNs would then most likely occur in the second round. That's probably the way it would play out, but it does depend on how fast the work on IDNs gets done.
This might be 180-degree reversal of community expectation. There are people who seem to believe that the next time out is going to be IDN strings as TLD labels. Sorry, as generators of TLD labels.
Yep. It was just kind of the discussion in terms of timing, Carrie. It's not, that's certainly not a decision we're making here. We're just saying what we are trying to do is create a policy here for new GTLDs in this committee. And this work has to converge and finish at a certain point, and it's intended to finish at the end of this year, and to come up with recommendations for the board for new GTLDs. What we're saying is that we need to do some additional work to look at the policy aspects for IDNs, and there may be some additional points that come out of that. We haven't even initiated the PDP yet, so there's no way I can say when's that going to be complete. But if that was delayed, we wouldn't use if that took a while to resolve, it wouldn't be used to hold up the work that we're doing on new utilities. You know what I mean? It's like additional work rather than a requirement that we can't finish this work until we've done the IDN work. If that makes sense. Is that clear? Yep.
All right. So I think that's pretty clear. I think we need to be careful about making sure that we put some limitations on the RFP for new GTLDs so that we don't destroy what later will be IDNGLDs, if that's the terminology that we're using for it.
Yeah, so you might put a restriction on what the XN dash dash or something like the equivalent of that, saying that wouldn't, if you were separating the rounds, you'd say that wouldn't be allowed as part of that, a label in the first round. Is that sort of thing you're talking about?
I think at least that. I'm pretty uncomfortable about having those two things split up like that. But maybe we'll get into more details of it as we go into the topic of IDNs.
So just explain that a bit more. So you're saying that you don't want to launch new GTLDs until the work on IDNs is complete. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't think I'm the person who can say that.
No,
but
I'm asking for your opinion. Is that based on your work on IDNs? You're saying that you think there's so many issues coming up with IDNs, but if a new ASCII TLD was created, it would impact the IDN work.
I think it's a problem that if we don't look at all at IDNs before we go live on new GTLDs.
That's not what we're saying.
I think we need to have something in there.
Yeah.
Whether it's everything is kind of a different question, I think. And I think I'll have to think a little bit about where that line goes, but I certainly think that we need to have some IDN hook into this, because otherwise we're going to get ourselves into trouble.
Tina, this is all very helpful, and I'm interested. And in the BC's official position is that IDNs have to be given priority in both resources and work and et cetera over further ASCII GTLDs because of concerns we have about, because of the number of concerns we have that are probably pretty much recognized by others. But we also have recognized the fact that the policy and the technical work and the policy work may be on different time frames in the ability to deliver. So it's going to be helpful to think about, would we then say, well, we have to have be at certain stages in the IDN process before we launch a live round. We have to recognize that when we launch a live round, resources are going to be really consumed. And we talked a little bit about that earlier.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be important for us not only to talk about to spend the rest of the day together, but I'm sort of looking ahead, Bruce, and thinking that we're going to have to put some topics on the parking lot and schedule a lot more time to go into some of them.
Yeah, I think probably what we're trying to do here is first test to see whether the work we've done so far on UGTLDs is valid in the context of what we know so far about IDNs. That's the first test. Then the second thing we're trying to identify is how does the work on IDNs get synchronised, not just between new GTLDs and IDNs, but between IDNs in the GNSO and IDNs in the CC. So that synchronisation is an issue. Part of the synchronisation is knowing what the timing is of... I know I've had discussions with Chris Disbane at the CCNSO, and it's at a very early stage there, so they haven't really got a timeline. But what's not... I'm assuming that the technical work has been, or discussions have progressed since... we met last, wherever that was in the world. Where did we meet last in the world?
In Marrakesh,
in Morocco. That things have moved a bit. So that's not sort of asking Tina and Sharon to do them up there, isn't it?
If it's a more long, it's about personal opinion. Given the time frames in which these things happen,
we will likely know before we get around to opening any calls for new proposals whether PLD labels that require a coding before they can be stored in the group zone are viable at all.
Right.
And if the answer to that question is at hand before any round would be opened, we can also be certain that the outcome of any necessary technical trial would be at hand before we actually got around to implementing any of the one thing. And the other stuff, this is without in any way suggesting a preference or use. Well, there's an interest, to be sure. But no preference. IDN probably doesn't introduce any new problems into our realm of concern that aren't already there. What it does is make several of them severely more intricate.
Yeah.
And whether or not we're going to be including IDN proposals in the next round, having illuminated the complex of problems from its most severe perspective probably would benefit that process in any case.
I think that's
so
right.
We shy away from IDN when it comes to the crunch. Having considered IDN fully during the course of the discussion cannot cause any damage and probably has something in the potential for alleviating future risk.
And that's mostly the agenda today, really. And what we've spent quite a bit of time in the last couple of days using language as an example rather than script. And so we're basically saying, here's a TLD using English, using the ASCII characters, and here's a TLD that means the same thing but in another language that doesn't have to use any of these special characters, if you like. And that helped focus that discussion as well.
Good question, Bruce. I don't know whether it's Tina or Carrie that will answer it, but I may be off the pace a little bit, but I remember, I think it was from one of Tina's presentations, I think it was probably Marrakesh, that there was a plan to test IDNs in the routes. Has that happened now, or not?
Not yet, no.
No, it hasn't, and maybe I should move into giving a status on that and some of the other IDN work that's going on at ICANN. Bruce, is that helpful at this point?
Yeah, that would be right. Yeah.
Okay. So we have several projects going on that have to do with IDNs. One of them is the IDN technical test, as it normally is referred to. And I'm just going to have to say, before going into more details of it, that right now the plan for that is being discussed within the IDN President's Advisory Committee, but also, in particularly, what is really important is that the root server operators agree to that plan. My feeling is that all parties have reached an agreement, but we are certainly going to have to do like just an additional set of communications back and forth before that is 100% clear. So that's my disclaimer for the day, I think.
Can I just ask, how does that work in practice? Is that the root servers individually agreeing, or is that the root server advisory group, or how does the decision get made?
That is actually a mix of the two, but we're definitely going through the RSAC together with Suzanne Wolf, who is the RSAC's liaison to the IDN board. But it's both that group, and then there's another, perhaps not as formally formed, sort of like, I don't want to call it working group, but there's some other group of root server operators. Both of these groups meet during IACF meetings, and it's through both of those. And that is to make sure that when we actually are going to test something in the root, that the root server operators know that we're doing it and are supportive of that kind of an experiment. But in any event, the plan for technical test is to first do a laboratory test, which is then a completely closed test that will check and see if insertion of Punicode strings is going to have any damaging effect of any problems on how the root servers are run.
So when you're doing laboratory tests, does that mean no connection to the public internet?
Yes.
So you basically set up in a lab a root server and then some applications?
It's going to be a completely closed test.
They are on the public internet, but they are in a private namespace.
That's right.
They will be tested in the environment in which they will subsequently be made available. However, it will not be the general user community will not be able to access that test. However, the terms of the test, the protocol, is going to be published so that anybody interested in duplicating the test in their own environment is not just free to, but encouraged to do so.
Yeah, that's right. The entire design of what it is that we're testing and how it's being tested and the results after having performed these tests will all be publicly available, especially as Kara is saying, for duplication purposes. So that is one step. Now, dependent on the result of that test, if the result is good, that we don't see any problems with proceeding into doing the live root test, we'll do that. If there turns out to be any problems, we're going to have to reconsider if there's anything that needs to be changed from a technical standpoint for us to move forward with the root test. The general...
Kara, you're just changing the protocol of the end user device, right? You said there's a bit of presentation layer.
One thing to just discuss, I'm not going to describe some of the details. There's a document being drafted, for example, about how to generate the streams that are going to be tested.
Yes.
So I can add to Tina's...
Yeah, I wasn't at that yet, but...
So
if everything goes well in the laboratory test, then we'll move to a live root test, and that is a test on more of an application level to see how things are going. Any application providers will, of course, be able to test out their systems and see how that's going with internationalized top-level labels. Within those two tests are several items that take place, and one is what Kara mentioned, which is a process for how to select the strings that we're going to be using for testing purposes. And I think we've pointed out several times that one of the rules for that is that the test strings are something that is not going to be used in production, and it never will be. So it has to be something that doesn't make any sense. And Kara can give an update on that later if he's available to do that. And another thing is the internal process by which ICANN or IANA is inserting TLD labels into root. And so that will be tested as well and defined specifically for this purpose during those two tests. And then the third item, I think that's the main three things, is we need to have a very good and detailed communication plan for the different aspects of how these different kinds of tests are working and what it means for the community and where the community can be included and take part in the tests and what the requirements are for that and where they cannot, but where, and of course also where any kind of experimentation that's going on in different parts of the world can be like an added resource as information as this technical work is moving forward. So that is what we have as overall content in the technical tests. In terms of, Kara, before I give the word to you, in terms of timeline and progress, you know, the first thing for me is to make 100% sure that we have everybody on board for it from the technical side, and that is the root server operators and the President Advisory Committee. In parallel with that, we're attempting to hire DNS experts, consultants who can actually define and conduct the laboratory test. We're looking at hiring a couple of very good DNS experts that have been around for a long time, and they're both Europeans and are just coming back from their vacation, and I hope they're going to say yes. If they say yes, then we'll kick off the laboratory test, you know, right away. But I still need to have that answer from them. In terms of overall timeline, I feel that we've built in pretty good time in the way that it looks right now, and we need to see if there's things that we can run in parallel tracks, but as it looks right now, without parallel tracking things, this is something that will be done by early 2008. And I understand that the reaction in the community is probably not going to be very pleased about that, which is why we need to try to push things back and put them into a parallel track so that we can do things faster and best.
Look at that one again. Just run through these different tiles. I've got them up on the screen there. So there's a laboratory test and there's a live route test. What are you talking, just give me half of the year, if you like. Is the laboratory test first half of next year? Or?
I'm sorry?
But I just want to get a very feel for time frames here.
Laboratory
test, what half of the year would that start and finish? Is that going to start half this year, first half next year?
That, if we get the consultants on board, that will start immediately.
Right, so that starts, what starts, October 06 or something? And how long would that run for?
That will probably run for a month or two, dependent on community feedback.
There is, say, October, December, I think.
Yes. If you want.
And what about the live route test?
I'm going to have to open up the plan for it, because I honestly have to remember. I can't say this on the top of my head.
Fine. I was trying to get up to 2008.
Another thing is that I don't want to commit.
No, I'm not asking you to commit, I'm just trying to get a sense. This is important for us to get a feel for where we've been.
Yeah, but you're also putting it up as something that looks very specific to me. And as I started off saying, I really can't commit to those timelines until that is something, the topics of the different tests is something that has been agreed with the technical community.
Can we just run the numerical part of this? There are a couple of things I have to say about interim manifestations for all of this. That may make it easier to understand the timeline.
Can you give us an idea of the number of months that would take place being involved in the library? Could you give us an idea of the number of months that would be involved in the library? Just, we've got Carrie, I know you fully appreciate this, we've got a lot of processes ourselves to think about maybe running in parallel, and maybe even coming up with the idea that additional resources are going to be needed. So is it going to be 3 months for the library test?
Well, certainly, add a few remarks to this, and then we'll give you as straight an answer to that question as can be given. Okay. A couple of things. If you remember when we had the just plain old new TLDs with four characters, unexpected, six characters unexpected, all sorts of themes happened, which, how should we say, some surprised people and reduced the value, the foreseen value of those strings. Okay, well, the minimum length that the stored form of an IDN can have is 7 characters. Can't be short of the 7 characters. And there are actually many country names. There are things that we can legitimately expect to see in this that might require the maximum available length, or close to the maximum available length of that storage string, and that is 63 characters. Now, nobody doubts for a moment that the root servers will not be the slightest bit distressed when asked to deal with things that are XN dash dash, and then anything more between 7 and 63 characters total. They won't be troubled by that. But when we start throwing these out into the application space, what will applications that didn't realize that there was such a thing as IBM on the top level do simply by being asked to accommodate that? And I can demonstrate failure right now to say nothing of what they're going to do when they're asked both to accommodate that and these monster, unexpected, whoever's dreamt string. Okay. Now we need
what's the longest string now? Is it museum?
There are groups. What's that? Museum and travel. Yeah. There are 2 6ers. The Arabic initiative is a document published by the UN. It's not just electronic stuff, but the UN in 2005 published a document listing what names of Arabic countries and Arabic representations would be needed as adjuncts to the current 2-character CC designation. And those labels translated into this encoded format they make 6 look like nothing. We're talking big time string length. Okay, now, before anybody can sanely suggest to a prospective name holder
that these things are worth asking for. We need to know that they are worth asking for. So the laboratory test is just a confirmation of the initial assertion. The root server, the DNS itself will not be stressed by this. Next question, what happens when we start throwing them in the application space? We can't guess at the answer to that, so it is very difficult to quantify how long it will take.
So what you're saying, Kerry, is that you would be doing, well, additional, I'm just trying to understand the time frames. You were saying that as you identify issues, you may let the trial run longer to understand those.
Let me actually say what I want to say, and then we'll revisit that question.
Okay.
So the need for this testing, before we made any representation of an impending product becoming available that will end up in massive litigation, we damn well better be sure it's a viable product. Okay. The first component is just testing the assertion that testing the assumption that the root servers, the name servers aren't going to be bothered by this.
Yep.
And then we need to throw these things at the application space, and at the earliest possible moment, make these kinds of tests doable in the public name space, so that if you would like to apply for an IDN TLD, you have a chance to see how it behaves live on the internet before deciding to pony up any dough. And I would suggest that the length of time that takes doesn't need to be quantified. We need to reassure the community. So the thing that is urgent is, when do we start that public component of this action,
yeah,
not when do we terminate it, because I believe during the course of that action, we will be receiving feedback that we have to be responsive to before we say, okay, time to go live. And parallel to that, we can be structuring terms of requests for new TLDs, cognizant of the fact that labels which are stored in their display form and labels which are encoded before being stored. The thing that's urgent to me, and this is now an expression of personal opinion, and the word then goes back to Tina, who is indeed holding the timeline, but it is as important as possibly can be for the path between now and the first public accessibility to this process is possible.
So that the laboratory...
It would be irresponsible now to talk about when that process is going to end.
So the public... Even the laboratory test is public, though, is that right? Because you can, it's just that you have to check, you have the right software to use it, yeah.
There's no way that we can make an exotic string globally resolvable without either setting up an alternate route of our own, and
yeah.
So I can't go into the business of sanctioning an alternate route.
That's what I understand a little bit. I still don't understand the laboratory test well enough. You're saying the protocol was open, but you were saying you're actually using the public internet to communicate using that protocol. Is that right?
There's going to be a test protocol. The following things are going to be done in a private name space simply because there's no legal mechanism for doing them in the public name space.
Yep.
Without the root server being... The root on the internet.
Yes, so
this is what we're doing in a private name space.
Yep.
You can do it in another private name space. So we can all participate in this experiment.
Oh, okay. That's
what I'm trying
probably have to talk to me offline how you intend to do that technically, but just blazing my engineering hat. But you're talking about the live root test is what you're referring to as the bit that you're trying to get to as quickly as possible then, is it?
The commencing of some form of demonstration, resolution of these new beasts in the root zone of the internet, I regard as a priority item.
Yes.
How long they will be there for demonstration and testing purposes, I humbly submit is very difficult to know now, because we don't know what the community response is going to be.
Yes.
But heaven help us if we let anyone believe that there is value in one of these things prior to knowing that there is value in one of these things.
Yes.
And the public demonstration serves the purpose of allowing prospective applicants to make that decision on the basis of their own experience, rather than any representation made by
that's kind of inferring that we're probably talking early next year, basically, for that.
Well, Tina, just fair to say that we certainly expect the public accessibility to some form of this to be an early next year thing.
Yeah.
And the timeline currently assumes that this will be wrapped up in the end of 2008, which I think is probably as good an estimate as any other.
Yeah, so if I can clarify what you're sort of wrapping up, there's some differences here. you might, because it's kind of a bit of an 80-20 rule, you might find 80% of the stuff out within the first 6 months, let's say, and then 20% in the remaining 6 months. And there's probably no necessary reason to turn it off for some time, because people can still be doing experiments and learning about it.
Well, and that's another reason why it's not possible to say how long it's going to go, because I could imagine that we would want to keep the test opportunity open for a while for those who might develop new products.
Yes,
because
the application development cycle is fairly long.
But there will, you know, at some point in time during that live root zone test, and when that is, you know, as Kara is saying, is not possible to say at this point in time, but there will be a point in time where we're going to say, all right, you know, we now have the information that we need in order to determine that we can go into production.
So the time frame for the new GPL...
Mr. Nimbus, can I ask just two specific questions related to this? Terry was saying, I think it's important to know maybe when do we start, as opposed to how long it's going to take. So my question will be, have you given to the consultants some timeline to respond, and do you have any plan B if the response is no?
I certainly hope that the response is not going to be no, but more of a, we think you should do this in addition or this instead of what you're planning. I have not given them a deadline for when they need to respond. We can probably take a look at trying to do that, but it is important that the discussions around the details of it take place. That does not mean that we're going to hold off with the laboratory tests. The laboratory tests, you know, will start off as soon as we have the right resources to build that. The technical community consensus has much more to do with the live root test. Of course, that has a hook and has a dependency in on us performing the correct laboratory test. But it doesn't mean that we're not doing anything in between the time that they're saying this is good enough. I actually think if you look at someone like the RSEC and the root operators, they want to see the design of the laboratory test and the details of it before they might say anything formally. So from my perspective, it's really important that we continue down that road. All I'm saying is I don't want anybody to hold me up on the topics of the different tests that we're talking about, because if they're changing because of requirements from the technical community, then they might change.
So as a result, you don't have a specific idea when the protocol, for example, will be completed and not published?
The laboratory test, or?
The protocol of the whole test.
The specification of both tests, or the first one, or the second one?
Well, if they are separated, then the first one, then the second one.
Okay, so the first one... Is very much dependent on getting DNS experts on board. We simply don't have the necessary staff for designing or conducting that test. And as I said, we're looking at two Europeans. We're just coming back from vacation, and I hope they're going to say yes, but of course I can't speak on their behalf. If we get them on board right away and considering or expecting that they have time for it right away, then I'm looking at the next couple of months for that to be out and available, and it's going to be published as soon as we can. It's not a matter of, this is not going to be a we want to conduct a test before we make it publicly available. As soon as we have the design of the test, that's going to be made public available, and anybody who might have any comments on it can do so, and those who are interested in duplicating the test can do so as well, and any input from parties doing that is going to be very much appreciated, and we'll compare the results and so forth. But yeah, and I'm sorry I don't have more specifics of it, but it really is dependent on getting those resources in, and until we have that, I can't say that. But I will commit to getting back to the GNSL Council in particular and let you know as soon as I have an indication of whether it's a yes or a no from them. And also on what their, you know, they have day-to-day jobs as most of you guys have. And so I assume if I get a yes from them, I also get an indication of when they actually have the time to perform the necessary tasks. And I would be very happy to go back to you guys and let you know as soon as I have that.
So just sort of working through the different time frames, the new GTLD process, the target is to have something for the, or a fairly final report by the end of this year, let's say by Sao Paulo. I had a call with the chair, the liaison to the GNSO from the GAC last night, Suzanne Sen, and she was telling me that the GAC is currently working on what they think the public policy principles are for new GTLDs, and they don't envisage that work being completed by Sao Paulo. They believe they might have a draft to share with us by Sao Paulo. So the reality is that work probably won't be finished until March. I'm envisaging then our work will probably be in final report form for sharing with people at Sao Paulo. But it's probably not appropriate to be transmitting that to the board maybe until we've had a chance to take into account the GAC guidelines. So that really means we're probably not going to sign off on it until early 2007, I'm guessing. But I think the expectation in the community is certainly that the work that's going on, and if you have a look at some of the recent board resolutions, they were certainly envisaging completing that work on new GTLDs by the end of this year, so we're pushing it out to accommodate the GAC until early 2007.
We are, but they also have been increasing their dialogue with the GAC and the Joint Board GAC Working Group about GAC input all along the process. So, and if we've essentially completed our work, but what we're doing now is incorporating and adjusting the work of the GAC, we still would be hopefully within the very early part of
2007, that's right, yeah. So then the issue is, as I said, that the work's complete, and one of the things that we talked about this morning was the process we envisage in the time frames, but we're talking about that there'll be some sort of batch rounds initially for the allocation of new GTLDs. And so there'll be some sort of start date, which means that there's an RFP issue, and then there'd be 4 months after that RFP issue when applications will start to be accepted, and you've had sort of 30 days to get those applications. So if we're using that time frame, so if we completed our work by early 2007, then the board would be looking to sign off, let's say they signed off in March, to start to complete some work to get all the RFP completed. Then you're probably talking issuing the RFP potentially mid-2007, I suppose, then with some period of time to respond to that RFP. So that's kind of probably the time frame we're looking at. I'm just trying to see how this synchronises with the idea in there. Yeah.
So that would put us in the July-August time frame, I think. That's right.
Yeah, August 7, probably. Yeah, and then the issue is how does this synchronise with the IDN stuff? And I just want to understand a little bit more what Fina was thinking, the books that she thinks are required. I don't think we can wait until 2008, for example, to complete, aren't we? And I don't think people will be comfortable waiting to 2008 for a new GTLD round. Why?
Bruce, I didn't mean for you to wait until everything else is ready for IDNs, before you go out with a request for new GTLDs. I just said there's policy considerations around IDNs that I think are necessary before to have considered and made decisions upon or defined before you can go out with an RFP from your GTLDs. That, to me, is not dependent on a technical test.
Right.
Okay.
Yes. No, that's certainly consistent then with what I'm thinking. Yeah, just trying to understand whether we're trying to wait until that's over. I mean, one example I would think is that any string that you choose to use in your test would almost straight away become a reserved word in the introduction via GTLD, so that at least for some period of time, so you don't confuse those two things.
I have a very practical question, though. If we introduce, so given that any word you use in your test will become a reserve, let's just hold that thought. If we introduce a round of names that can be stored in the DNS, is that... I'm going to work on this, Terry. that begs the question to me of when, and we're not allowing, we're not addressing the what we're calling the IDN version, means we'd have to be incredibly careful, wouldn't we, in the first round about potential conflicts with the existing strings. Let me finish. With the existing strings, so at, because if we're not going to let the existing strings be considered at this time for not for the non-ASCII characters, that is the Arabic writing of .com or the I'm sort of struggling with yeah. Do you see what I mean?
Just to confuse this ever so much, but ever so crucially more. Again, without stating any preference, I mean, that there are different ways we can do this, but there's yet another factor, and that is, as I understand it, you all agreed that differentiation on the basis of the visual criteria was the real informant. Well, actually agree on. There's the visual, there's the phonetic, and there's the semantic, and all the phonetic is arguably irrelevant. Not relevant in this case. The semantic is yet another component, but forget about that. Okay. There are scripts other than Latin which contain characters that look just like Latin. That, in fact, is one of the reasons we got into this. Yep. So if we open a call for Latin-only ELDs and end up with strings that are actually prime in some other script, we're kind of given the us guys get another advantage, and one of the reasons why there's such incredible pressure on this IDN thing is because the other speech communities want their turn. So deciding that they can't quite have it yet, we get yet another one, but this time we actually are aware of the fact that there are sequences of Cyrillic letters that are identical to sequences of ASCII letters. And if we make it possible for some smart guy to ask for a string solely on the basis of its convertibility for lots of money,
yeah,
later, it's really,
right.
We are doing nobody a favor.
Can you give an example just to start that discussion?
EPA, just give you a sequence. That is, that there's an E, a P, and an A, which for us are that, and a T is an R. And so I think it's a really good one. You may have heard this before. At a joint symposium on exactly this, arranged by UNESCO and the ICU in Geneva a few months back, one of the alternate approaches to this, with significant pride, announced the fact that there was now a two-letter Cyrillic code for Russia resolving in their namespace. Now, the Cyrillic character for R looks like a Latin P. The Cyrillic, the second one looks like a Latin Y.
So we're talking lowercase.
So the Russians were proudly announcing in an alternate namespace the available dot what to them was RU, but it's indistinguishable from dot EY. And had there been any Paraguayans in the room, they would not have been happy about this.
And that can be converted, that someone realizing that, wait a second, next time around, it will be not ASCII for sure. So the Russians are certainly going to be there, and how can we gain this by asking, and it's been all along, the Russians are doing, the Cyrillic language community has been, languages, communities, have been doing this in the inverse. There are also sorts of things in .ru, which are ASCII strings that look exactly like meaningful Cyrillic strings.
Yes, so you're
saying that there's a lot of meaning here, and we can't both be saying, IBM just around the corner, but not this time, folks. Because that
interim
opportunity is going to be...
So can I just capture some of that? It's just important to understand the reasoning. So if allow I'm just going to call it ASCII. I'll worry about terminology later. ASCII GTLD round without IBM GTLD, a person may try to get an advantage. Because what you're saying is that you, by registering, has meaning in another, that looks similar.
The greater the public awareness of this becomes, the more subject to abuse an ASCII-only round may be. And there's lots of conditionality to what I'm saying. All I'm doing is I'm asking to consider yet another dimension to this.
And then presumably, so you're saying that you pick your .eca or whatever, which to an English person means nothing, but you're saying that might be the equivalent of, I don't know, .sex or something in Cyrillic or whatever.
Doesn't that though then hit the challenge? I mean, there was a notion that there is public comment on any of the strings, so that allows the community of Cyrillic speakers and encoded TLD experts to look at it and say, no, you can't use that one because that is equivalent to an encoded TLD block. And so I'm just saying the whole thing's up for a year. You've got the challenge period open that allows the experts to say, no, that was a problem.
But there's a fundamental difference in what Carrie's talking about and what we were talking about. We were talking about the clash with an existing TLD. What Carrie's talking about is a clash with a future TLD that they're not allowed to have yet.
Right, but we also have that whole category of things that are a cultural problem, things that are not acceptable. Well, it is a cultural problem.
Well, yeah.
It's a cultural problem in yet another sense of cultural problem.
Yeah.
This is a pretty stupid question, so I'll assume the answer. But if that was the case, and we were looking to a long time, at some stage, I assume it would be out of the question to be able to identify all these instances.
The numbers of potential things that we could recognize is a far smaller number than the number of things that might actually involve like people with greater understanding of the intricacies and intricacies than us. But what we're essentially doing is saying that any discussion that was held before Tina and I turned up about visual similarity as a threshold criterion is invoking the principle of IBM makes everything worse, made worse by need to consider visual similarity between different scripts rather than visual similarities within just the basic Latin script.
Yeah, so what we're talking about is we've got a public comment process here, and then we have things, the criteria. So, I mean, unless you somehow put it under a D or something, that you can, that looks under cultural.
Something to the effect of that the string cannot be equivalent to, appending a possible encoded string.
But if the string is truly reasonable, in the context of which it's thought. Somebody says we want a string for the following purpose, and the derivation of that string from that purpose is satisfying. Any coincidental resemblance of that string to another string is just that's just the rules of the game. But what we're doing there again is throwing first come first serve bias in the direction of those whose legitimate needs are met with asking. I'm not advocating anything here. It's just that if we're wondering what's the big deal with IBM, the big deal is that any problem we might think of is potentiated by the impending availability of things that are displayed using other than just A to Z.
Yeah, so the other way of handling it potentially is that if you might have different dates between when you go live with something versus applying. So you could potentially apply for these, let's say, the round. So yes, you can propose a string that is formed using the IDM standards, but the ability to launch with that string is pending the completion of technical tests or something like that. So at least allows in this allocation round that we're talking about, that you have the opportunity to see those strings. So in other words, in the application round, you say, okay, you're applying for your string, and so I want this string of Cyrillic or this string of Japanese or I want this string of ASCII, so you can see all those string choices in that round. But the decision to go live with that particular string might be separated, if that makes sense. So you can see the string conflicts and allow a chance to sort of say, okay, the Cyrillic community generally wants the string for some particular purpose within their community, and then someone's just proposing the ASCII string and not really making it clear that they're intending to bring purposes down the transfer line. Just trying to see how you take into account or provide people the opportunity to bring those issues forward.
But that could be a policy declaration here, that no delegated TLD string in any script may ever be transformed into a visually similar other script. So if you want something that doesn't make terribly much sense, it's an ASCII sequence, which would make sense
if it's a Cyrillic
sequence. Yeah. That's not one of your options. You want to buy the ASCII sequence and you can otherwise argue your way into it. Fine.
Yeah.
But if a subsequent request is made to transform that into a visually identical Cyrillic sequence, sorry, that will not be possible.
And so that gets picked up by, so it's still kind of coming into, it's still the sort of public comment process, isn't it? So you're saying?
Well, it's confusingly similar, but it doesn't show up until the public comment.
Yeah.
Can I, Bruce, I'm sorry, but I don't know if it's enough to have a public comment period to show that, actually. There's so many risks or opportunities or whatever you want to call it for someone applying for something, and maybe it's not even malicious, maybe they don't even know that they're applying for something that looks like something else, that I don't think that necessarily that a public comment period is going to show that. I think we need to have some sort of
a public comment, meaning, Tina, that if someone were unaware and they did it unintentionally, it wouldn't necessarily be caught by the, quote, public, and therefore it would need to be caught by a panel of experts.
The question is, we can never recruit that panel of experts.
I don't think
there is a risk.
You can only do it by public comment, really.
I think
it's like trademarks. It's like, I don't know necessarily this trademark.
Yeah, but if you do it by public comment, but you also undertake targeted solicitation and awareness to expert bodies that you know of to encourage their participating in the public comment.
Well given that, especially if you're allowing the initial introduction of the more sort of ones that are ASCII-oriented, there's not that many scripts as common. It's an issue with Cyrillic. It's not an issue with Chinese, for example.
I really hate to say this, but the risks for confusability in the grander scheme of things are small between Cyrillic and Latin when compared to some of the Brahmic languages. I mean, it's very graphically ornate things.
Yeah, but
they're not
unencoded.
The display form, the potential exploitable confusion between the display forms of names, in terms of Latin and Cyrillic, that's actually an easy case.
Yeah.
It gets way worse. Our work is not
But Carrie, what I'm talking about is constraining our initial launch might be more to do with comparing Latin and Cyrillic, because we're only allowing Latin in to start with, versus we're not opening up to comparing a whole lot of other scripts.
I guess you forget that, for instance, for Chinese, there is an input method. So somebody may use pinyin to input the Chinese word, And somebody goes in and registers, for instance, a domain name, .gongxi, which is actually something that right now China is running in their own environment. Which
right,
means
so you're saying it maps to the word.
Exactly. So you just put the registered opinion, you know, how do you know this opinion? Maybe you even say so, maybe it's supposed to be opinion.
But this is the point. I don't think you're ever going to know, and this is why we're sort of incorporating. Our objective here is basically this, you know, that the pair of D strings should not be confusingly similar to an existing string. And then you have a public comment process. I can't see any other way other than the first stage is number one, so you've got staff to make a determination and can engage appropriate expert advice. And, you know, as much as we know about these things, we obviously use that knowledge. But other than that, you're going to rely on someone pointing it out. As Bernard says, Bernard does actually know this about the input method or something and draws that to someone.
I'll give you another very likely thing that will be different from the Indian community, just in official language, I believe, is actively participatory in this discussion. And it is, in fact, that the scripts used for the Indian languages where some of the richest potential for confusion exists. And if we were to say that because we recognize the difficulty here, we're going to have a first, whatever we're going to call it, hybrid round, where potential confusability is constrained to Latin and Cyrillic, we need to inject some art into the explanation of that to avoid people saying, okay, great, the corner of the world for which bias is being, favorable bias is being displayed has just grown. But come on, guys, what about us? And I do believe that an awful lot of the pressure here comes from the Arabic community, right, for that script. Which are, I mean, there are any number of languages written with variants on the Arabic alphabet. And I don't think there's anybody in the room, at least, who can even vaguely identify the experts to whom we need to direct this. So this gets really intricate, really quickly.
So, solution?
Well, what I'm
getting lots of problems. The
solution is recognizing the fact that life is getting more difficult,
that's
and it's going to keep getting more difficult.
Right,
and all I'm doing is saying that the average anguish may not be significantly reduced by having an ASCII-only round, and indeed the aggregate distress may be increased by having an ASCII-only round, simply because the community awareness of all of this is growing as we speak.
Is it an option, I don't know if I'm in line here or not, but is it an option to allow the applications for the IDN, but the launch date or going into the root is subject to...
That's what I was suggesting, is that if you
allow
people to actually put the strings they
at
want.
At the same time, so no one's harming it.
Still, I mean, come back to something I said before. It is another illustration where, even if you allow it to go through early, it is a case where people who are not yet ready, but working seriously on something, who have not decided to submit something immature, will then be penalized by somebody who went in and did submit something immature. That is why I believe we must have a challenge period where, if after when the applications are published, somebody says, hey, God, this is actually what our stuff was supposed to be, that they can come in and submit to completing up their application, provided they come up immediately with the application fee, just like the bond.
Okay, any other comments? But there's still very much a timing issue here, isn't it? It's sort of saying, you know, are we holding everything up? And as characters, there's lots of complexity to look forward to. Or do we sort of have an approach to sort of do some sort of hybrid, and I'm kind of leaning more towards what Ray is suggesting, which is basically that you allow people to put their things up and you have a look at those, but you might say, well, putting in an SN-string doesn't happen until mid-2008 or something, but at least you haven't allowed someone to sort of come in with, if we're looking at string conflicts, which is partly what our process is trying to do, so I put in my ETA string, and someone else puts their ETA in Cyrillic, you go, okay, now we really have a conflict. Let's sort that conflict out so that the person in Cyrillic has got the support base and can use all those methods. They then have, if you like, a fire right on that string. And then if because you might say, okay, we've decided we're not going to allow IBM to cause all these problems.
Well, what about planning around of accepting
label proposals.
Yes.
Ed Chief gets some sense of what we're in for, and then on its basis, plan the terms of the actual call.
Yes. I'm struggling with a visualization of if we do what you're proposing, I've got a number of problems. One of them is this issue of overwhelming the process. And, really overwhelming the process with what would be label proposals as well as applications from those bidders who intend to primarily go for what we think of today as a nasty strain. And we have introduced a level of complexity about the consultation process and the demands on staff that are, we're going to have to augment staff with we being the broad term, with different kinds of skills depending on what the screen applications are going to be, right?
The application cost, wouldn't it?
Let's say we get a combined, let's say IDN is all sorted and we're doing it, we're still going to have the first round of any of these things is going to have a lot of reputation.
And maybe it's just my naivete, but I actually was envisioning rounds that are about IDNs, rounds that are about ASCII, rounds that are about IDNs.
Well,
I'm
just hearing different views.
I know. I'm just I'm learning from
them. Yeah. I mean, I think the views as I've heard it on that are, if you have a round of ASCII first and then you have a round of IDN, those that have applications that would fit into the IDN round feel that they may be disadvantaged by those in the ASCII round choosing one of theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're saying if we do a round of IDNs first, it could be a while before we're ready to do that. And then we're saying if we do a hybrid of those things, which is allowed people to at least put the strings in, I'm a little bit worried about frivolous stuff now. I'm not sure that I'm comfortable with that's put up 10,000 strings to start the sort out. I feel like the $50,000 or whatever it is application fee, if that in a sense is regulating it. Yeah.
Per character. That's not even funny.
Is there anyone on the phone? No. I haven't heard any beeps of anyone joining. Yeah. It's kind of interesting because a lot of what I've seen come out of the last couple of days, I'm kind of wondering whether we want to launch an IDN policy development activity, because in many ways I think most of the questions have probably been answered, apart from really this one, which is how you deal with the confusingly similar in the context of the culture and all those other things that Kat has just mentioned. And assuming, because bear in mind that we've said that any application needs to adhere to the IDN guidelines and that's one of our contractual conditions. So
and we have some questions about were there any additional technical capabilities required.
Mm. That would be one of those things that's we have the hook, if you like, the team's talking about it. The hook is that you need to adhere to the IDN guidelines, and I guess they can be updated, something like that.
I suspect the signal Marilyn is probably wondering about. If what you see is what you get duality doesn't exist, then registry administrative wherewithal is less elaborate. So if in fact you need to deal with a client who believes that this is what I have just registered and transform into the gobbledygook that actually is registered,
yes.
You need to understand stuff that you otherwise don't need to understand.
Yeah.
And I have a question about who is an UDRP and any other
So most of those things are taking EDRP, but that is then a dispute process that's using trademarks, and I'm not sure how that changes.
I think that since I can have a policy about outsourcing and encouraging the provision of the UDRP function by third parties, I'm not sure that it's a question of ICANN doing something as much as seeking to launch something external.
Right, to making sure that a dispute provider that's able to deal with
transition. And I'm thinking about actually, Bruce, the question we talked a little bit about yesterday about, let's say that I have, I probably have a need for your expertise, so. Let's say that I have a situation where I have famous and well-known brand holders who are protecting their trademark in 82 countries, 92 countries, et cetera, et cetera. Some have, I was just thinking about what are the PDP issues that may exist. Right now, we have a dispute resolution process about the, at the second level, right, which basically says there's certain requirements and there's a UDRP that addresses it. Microsoft translated into a different language looks different than, you know, I'm just struggling with what... That's what I would assume, in which case we would be looking for, our assumption being that the name you would be registering in that string would have to be consistent with that string. And then the other question...
Before I get there, just two more. As long as all I'm doing is describing how this gets worse, there are a couple of more things. One is that this, it is not supposed to be, it's not intended to be legible stored sequence. May coincidentally be a legible sequence of characters. So I'm an XN dash dash somebody's trademark. It is not barred if you easily enough turned off. And to invert this, the Cyrillic lowercase o looks exactly like it. That exists, that result.com. So these things are actually already there. So however we deal with these issues as they appear in the second level namespace, which I suspect is we barely even recognize and much less know how to deal with them, can certainly be scaled into the top level. But we haven't really come to terms with the situation that we've already have.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. But I think those are the
Yeah, we can check up and see if we can get some more specifics on it. I don't have any numbers either, but I have heard that they're starting to get some of those as well. I mean the dispute resolution providers. No, I don't know, but I'd be happy to send out a request and ask them for statistics on it so that we have something to look at. Yeah. Examples as well.
But there is one simple requirement that we haven't really put in. I guess that's part of the TLD. I mean the IDN. You know. Is that you can't have an unencoded ASCII that starts with the XN dash dash. and there's nobody can come with I want a TLD that is XM dash
yeah,
right, and that's, I mean, we don't specifically have that in there, but that's something that definitely needs to be added.
I would go so far and say it's not just XM dash dash, it's any prefix. I would think so.
The contract signature is accepting registration with hyphens in the third and fourth position. And that allows for, one of the things that we were talking about at the meeting immediately prior to this one is, can the things that need to be modified with the IDN protocols be adequately done without needing to replace the X and dash dash prefix? In other words, we need to change the way we're coding things to convey more information in order to solve problems we have. So I'm not going to go into technical jargon. The XN designates one particular form of encoding. It replaced a previous one that no longer exists, and there may be other ones at some future date, which is a massive headache on a registry level. Has clear policy conditions too, but right now nobody wants to do anything that would require the invalidation of that XN dash dash sequence.
I would like to be clarified a little bit more about the risk of confusion. Are we talking about confusion? On the side of the end user, I mean, what is displayed on the screen, or is there any confusion also in the way that those characters are coded?
The coding is not subject to any form of ambiguity whatsoever. When we're talking about confusion, we're talking about visual confusion at the user interface. Going one step further, one says names displayed using common fonts at normal display sizes. Because very often, if you make something really huge, you can discriminate between one thing and something else that, in a small presentation, is usable. So
I don't understand very well what's the downside of that kind of confusion.
Well, the thing is that all of this confusion has nothing to do with the domain name system.
Yeah.
But we make policy, so what does IGN have to do with it? Policy is relevant to the secure operation of the domain name system. Affect what is stored in the domain name system, and as we back out into the user interface, how far does our concern extend? And I think we all agree that things which back out of the domain name system into the user interface that can cause confusion and allow people to be cheated and whatever is our concern. But even that's something, I suppose to be honest, that's a stretch.
It can make a distinction between what we might need to seek to influence through awareness and education versus what is our direct responsibility, right? Because let me give you an example. Carrie lived with this. I objected to the problem at the time, and no one thought I was smart enough to know that would be a problem. More than three-letter GTLDs won't resolve, not because of the DNS, but because of the rest of us. And we didn't do a good enough job reaching the rest of us, right? So we created a lot of problems that education and awareness might have ameliorated to some extent. So if we don't take a education and awareness approach in some of this, we may see a failure in IDN, not at the level that we're working on, but at other levels.
And Marilyn, that's exactly why we want to make a big deal out of doing application layer testing as well. But even that is not everything, right? So I think it's a step in the right direction.
But in a lot of cases, I don't think your applications vendors are actually going to bother changing it until there is a problem. I mean, they generally don't. Until the demand is there and the problems are there, they're not going to change these things.
And so tell me, so give me the name of a couple of application vendors.
Yeah.
I'm serious. Give me the name of a couple of application vendors.
Well, I don't want to do that, but I could say something else on that topic, and that is that the experience that I think, at least I can, and probably the registries that have TLDs that are longer than the three characters, the experience that we have is that ISPs, for example, is not going to change something until it's the customer knocking down their door.
It literally depends on the ISP and who they get the request from. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying, yeah. So there's a lot of,
but it's not just the ISP.
I can answer your question specifically. When IBM first became available on the second and lower levels, the problem was that web browsers couldn't handle it. And I'm supposed to show you. When I come over here, I'll show you a useless IDN. You can take your pick. There are applications that can't deal with IDN at all. And everybody seems to think that this entire discussion somehow focuses on the Internet as though it were identical with the web. So you can use IDN in a limited email context, and the engineering guys are working really on solving intensively on the solution of that problem. And when they solve it, then all we have to do is wait for the email applications developers to incorporate this.
But Jay, that would say to me, and I suffer from having written language like this in the comments that I made to the Department of Commerce's MOU and the comments that I filed to the President's Strategy Committee, a fair amount of our work in this area may be collaboration and encouragement and partnership with these other parties, and having to educate people that, you know, to encourage them to do their job. I really recognize that. I think it makes perhaps our job harder, I can, since we're not in charge of critical parts of it. And the policy we're devising is in particular it's even beyond the policy recommendations that we would make unless we make a policy recommendation about this collaboration.
Just was trying to identify what things do we need to do to change our recommendations or incorporate our recommendations to cater for IDN issues. So this is obviously one of them that would come out of the reserve word list that we would restrict strings that in this category. So it's pretty much an existing reserve word commitment. But I think we still do need to sort of identify that there could be a timing issue between when it's permissible to add one of these strings into the group. And so I think what we might do in our process, that's assuming our process is starting in August of next year, when you can actually submit your application, that you would allow people to submit applications for these strings, and we look at we use the process that we've developed for conflicts at the Latin character level, also for this process. And I guess if the technical committee decided not to go ahead with one of those strings, then the applicant would get a full refund or something like that. You know, this would be some way for them to... what's that?
You know, it occurs to me that it may have to be... I don't know if it can be a complete refund. There may have to be a processing fee of some standard amount because you have to go through the process.
Yeah. I'm just sort of saying, you know, because we... because we don't know, you can't get certainty. I would have thought it was... yeah, or some partial refund or something like that.
So the facility staff resources.
Well, they're not going through, presumably, to signing contracts and things like that, so, yeah, early stage in the process. So when we talked about graduated fees, they might be paying the first fee, but not the second fee or something like that. Yep. Yeah, there'd have to be an element of, and if it goes to contention, then there's cost in contention, I think you have to pay those costs. Yeah. Or the contention gets resolved later on, between the two strings when IDMs become available to think it through. So I think we just have to kind of look at a way of accommodating this situation, but the recognising, as Ray said, that the point that goes live might be different from when the others go live. Any other requirements you think would need to be in a, that you know of, so far, Tina, that you think would need to be in an RFP that incorporates IDMs?
Well, I was thinking a little bit about the first thing you mentioned, Bruce, which was that phone call that we had a few weeks back talking about how to make some principles around internationalized top-level labels. And one of the things that I suggested was that we took a look at the IDN guidelines as they stand right now and change them, you know, around so that they could become applicable and perhaps useful in what can be a set of requirements that that we put forward for IDN CLVs.
Yes, certainly I agree. Yeah, and so one of the things that we talked about in our process is if you're going to put in an IDN thing, it needs to apply the IDN guidelines. So what we'll do is, you're saying those guidelines are focused on the second level at the moment.
The guidelines right now are focused on second level, and we could make them focused on the top level.
Yeah, and that's something that would be achievable. I mean, we're almost talking a year away, and that should be achievable.
That should certainly be achievable, because what, if you'll bear with me for a minute on that topic, well, you probably remember that we did the revision from version 1.0 to version 2.0, and then we talked about moving towards a best current practice, a BCP approach in the IPF sense. And we had last year made a promise to deliver something around that at the time of the Morocco meeting. And then in Morocco, those of you who heard the status report and saw the resolutions from the board meeting know that the resources from the community that was used on revising the guidelines were the same resources as being used for technical task considerations and so forth, and because of that we were delayed, but the board granted us to spend some more time on doing additional revisions of the guidelines towards Sao Paulo. So at the last meeting of that working group that is charged with revising the guidelines, we discussed potential options for things that need to be changed so that they can be used for top-level considerations as well as lower levels.
So
we can certainly come with some input in that direction.
Just want to have a quick sort of check of what they are. So this is 2.1. What is the resourcing? Is that, are your resources increasing? I don't know whether Tina or Kurt can answer that. Has more staff been put into this area of IDNs? Or
for guidelines?
Just generally.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, we actually have a couple of positions open, so I'm even interviewing someone here this afternoon for one of them, but if there's anybody who knows anyone who needs a job and who are interested in IDN, then you can certainly send them my way. What we have right now is what we call an IDN project coordinator and an IDN technical officer, I think is the name of that job description. What it really means is that we need some staff resources on highly on the technical side, especially on DNS expert knowledge area. And then we need someone else who can help out with coordinating and steering all of these projects that we have going on IDNs. We've only talked about a couple of them here, right? So if the TNSO starts a policy development process, that would be one of them. The technical task guidelines, IANA repository. There's some other project that has to do with outreach and communication, I think, is in all of them. But indeed, we have open positions in that area.
Yeah, I guess the issue for us is also trying to, this is the guidelines, by the way, so it's not a huge document here.
Nope.
I'm looking at the right one. There's 9 guidelines, so it's pretty much like a page of text. That's what the IDN guidelines are at the moment. So obviously the first one's an obvious one, stick to the standards. The second one is in implementing standards as an inclusion approach. In implementing standards, we'll associate each label in a registered internationalised domain name as it appears with a single script, etc. So it's not a huge job to update this to reflect the top level then, presumably.
No, I think we're gonna come up with a draft of that within a pretty short time frame.
Yes.
We're gonna have monthly meetings up against Sao Paulo, and we're gonna try to hit a VCT by Sao Paulo. But the TLD part is gonna go faster than that, I think.
Yeah. It's kind of sounding to me like I'm not sure we necessarily want to kick off a separate PDP on IDNs at the moment, or. Whether we're better off sort of spending time focused on this PDP we have currently and incorporating some of this concepts in
that issue is not suffering from any dearth of numbers of groups busy fretting about it.
Yeah, but that's not the issue for us, right? So one option would be that we leave these placeholders.
Right.
We have these significant placeholders all the way through.
Yes.
So that you, in the end, you have a PDP which has a track, and then at some point it flips into the expanded part for IDN.
Yeah, and I think the thing is recognizing, if we could just sort of think a little bit further about how you do a PDP, sort of PDP, an RFP, prior to the permission being given to technically launch, but at least we can allow people to deal particularly with highlight on the string complex and stuff. But I don't see that being something, you know, you pay a dollar for it. I think it's got to go through the same process as all the other strings.
So the one thing that I would just sort of have to think about in my mind is we have a terms of reference for PDP-05, and then we have a separate exploration underway on IDNs. We're going to have to revise, we make a decision, we need to either revise the terms of reference or note that we have a separate terms of reference, and that terms of reference just refers back to PDP-05 and says it'll be amended.
It says
it'll be amended or...
What I'm saying, I guess, if you look at what our terms of reference are, they're more or less the same terms of reference. Mm-hmm. Because as Karen points out, a new GPLD is a new GPLD. And whether it happens to be XN-dash-dash something or other isn't really technically much different to whether it's something or other else. And things are confusingly similar. I think the addition, if you like, is that the confusingly similar, and I've heard as I was looking at the room something about, I think Carrie was talking about, you were talking about font sizes and some other elements where we could probably put some more words around that. But it's as seen by the user because it's not confusingly similar when we're talking about comparing XN-dash-dash-dash with XN-dash-something else, and the two ASCII strings look totally different. But when they are presented to the user, they have to look the same. It's that bit that we need to be concerned with.
This is purely an effort to... So it's just important. There's also a community expectation that there'll be demonstrable progress on the policy related to IDN. We have a proposed terms of reference. If what we're going to do is merge the terms of this terms of reference as a sub... part of the overall PDP-05. We're going to conclude PDP-05 and go to the board with phase one of PDP-05, hypothetically. This is now phase two, or...
No, I'm trying to see if what we go to the board with incorporate what I've just been talking about in terms of taking into account the IDN stuff.
I understand, but I'm looking at the proposed terms of reference.
Yeah.
And sort of say under 5, it says additional policy considerations. So pretty much up to 5, we say take into consideration, which I think I'm with Bruce on.
Yeah.
Under 5, it says additional policy considerations.
Yeah, and the one that was identified here was on whether the string to the left of the dot, if you like, should match up some way. And I'm wondering whether that partly comes almost back to an IDN guideline discussion, like whether that... Is that something that we should be encouraging as part of an IDN guideline?
Exactly, and then we should reference.
Yeah.
Yes, it will make it...
The IDN guideline
today on, does the screen have to be the same up to the left and the right of the dot?
No, it doesn't. Right.
It doesn't.
Right.
Something interesting, actually. The rule is that it's a single script within a label.
Within a label, but within a print two dots.
But isn't that controversial? Yes. That the dot is what I would expect to leap at the suggestion that we might have this propagation. One name on one script are the ones who are driving their heels. So there's an educational assignment even in other corridors that needs to be addressed.
I think it's kind of, there's some quite interesting implications of that to substantially simplify my personal view of some of these intellectual property issues. Mm-hmm. If you're not getting, you're not having to say, okay, I've just created these IDN things, I've got to register my Qantas and all of them.
It does substantially simplify. It also means that when I police a particular TLD, I can have the paralegal who speaks that language police it versus having that paralegal police 25. You know, I can it will substantially simplify.
Providing some relief in this. I mean, it doesn't just, everything doesn't get worse because it's complicated. There's also positive complication. And just imagine, and this is academic at this point, that we have both a Latin EPA and a Cyrillic EPA. And we differentiate them by the way they are populated to the left of the dot, where the Cyrillic EPA is visibly Cyrillic only, and the Latin one is visibly Latin only. There are people who would throw bricks at me for hearing me say this way, whose opinion really counts. But nonetheless, it's not visual. There are no two scripts that are identical but different. It's just there's a confusing number of elements in them. So if there's a policy requirement for the inclusion of non-confusing elements in what would otherwise be a confusing name, then things move in the breathe easy direction. Well, the problem with it, the reason that the guys who don't like it don't like it, is that it's impossible to police lower domains. But on the other hand, it's the same reason why you can't have an all-number top-level label, because it can then be confused with a numeric address. But one letter will do it.
Yes.
So one letter that is unique to a script that can be reasonably expected that a user would recognize it, but it's not Latin, otherwise it wouldn't have this one legal in it. Okay.
Does that address the question, though, if it's not in the IDN guidelines, but hypothetically, I think it's a good idea to have that kind of, then that means, and that means it's a policy question, not an IDN guideline question to me.
Well, it's a bit of a combination. Policy question. Well, I think what you're saying is that when you start looking at the broader issues beyond just technical, and you're looking at legal and various other things, a policy group might say this is a good idea, and the technical group says yes, that's implementable, I suppose.
Question: if I came up, the policy group came up with a, you know, these are good ideas. We're asking you to tell us whether they can be done from a technology perspective, and we recommend that as policy.
That's probably the way that it should happen. Yeah, and I suppose partly this is something that would be good to have in these tests in a way. Is that Tina's talking about is that. Okay, we want to test the concept. So I'm not sure I fully understood everything Carrie said, but Carrie, you're saying there's some identifier that's visual to people that says this is a particular script, eh?
Again, any two scripts which are potentially confusable
are
not potentially confusable in their totality. And there are distinctive elements in them, and there are confusable elements in them.
Yes.
And if there is a requirement that strings be differentiated so that they include enough of the distinctive elements to obviate any need for,
which is basically what we have with that's really what that's all about. We're specifying how to make them different. We've got to specify it the other way around. We're basically saying the test is, would two users be reasonably likely to be confused by those two streams? And you're saying one of the ways of passing that test is to make sure that at least X number of characters is...
Well, what I think everybody agrees on is that the internal to a given label holds water. I mean, if one label looks like another label, it does. And if it doesn't look like another label, it doesn't.
Yes.
But the question is, if one label in a name can be permitted to be confusable, if another label in a name is clearly not.
That requires propagation of policy.
Now I'm with you.
That's the frailty in this, and it's probably a fatal one.
Carrie, you're talking about, if I have something that looks like this, and it's, I don't know, hello.com, and I have something that looks like that, those are clearly differentiated because I've got those three different characters in the label and stuff. So that's the difference. If we're talking about just one label between two dots, you might have, I did some capitals for a second, but they are different strings, though, too, but you'd easily confuse them. And you're saying, if I do something more like this, and this happens to be, I've got some other really obvious things to alert the user. I can see the problem in what you're suggesting, because you are going across... you're going across the point of delegation boundary. But the other approach is it's in label, which is what I was wondering. That's what I thought you were first saying. So if I do it within label, it looks like that. Those are clearly different strings in the label before the dot there. And so what you're sort of saying is that if it's a Cyrillic string, it has something like Cyrillic, whatever it is, .com, yeah. There's pressure to, in some cultures, yeah, but the more restrictive it should become, yeah, I agree, yeah. But I guess now a part of this is really what would be in IDN guidelines, this kind of debate as to what's required in the strings. I think as soon as you start moving across strict bounds, I don't think it's workable, actually.
I'm suggesting that it would provide relief if it were workable.
Yeah. Anything else anyone wants to raise on this at the moment? I think we probably just need to think about it some more as well. Okay.
Your example about having characters that you could distinguish by looking at the label and some script would do. So would you say it shouldn't be about the I will because you couldn't tell by looking at it that was actually a script to it?
No, not at all. I'm simply saying that the existence of an ASCII hello precludes the existence of anything else in any other script that looks like hello.
That's
if you wanted to demonstrate adequate differentiation,
at least one element in
the second label would have to be so clearly distinctive that risk for confusability would not exist.
Which, in other words, just becomes
if you want a real word,
pick lowercase C-A-X-A-T.
Yeah, sugar. A Russian reading that in the belief that is Cyrillic will read that as sugar. Okay. Now, will some smart person in an ASCII-only round say, I want that C-A-X-A-T, and has constructed an organization, a persistent, a reasonable acronym to get it, do this because, you know, that's going to happen when the Russian sugar industry is up.
And so what we're basically saying then is, the way of dealing with that is to say, okay, if you want to run that, fine, you can put up your CXXSAT, so you close out the public comment. The Russian sugar industry that wants the Cyrillic, whatever.
They would need to add yet another element which is not confusable with any element in Latin, or any other, I mean, we keep saying Latin and Cyrillic, but there are other scripts there that are...
Yeah, I know, it's just an easy one to use, yeah. What's that, sir?
What?
Well, no, they would have to apply for this. If they wanted a string, if the issue was that they were already, you know, their plan was to launch a string in Cyrillic, but we said we're not ready to take Cyrillic strings at the moment, and then someone basically just does this in ASCII, they trump them, basically, because they're planning to come out in the second round, but the string's already gone. So the way to deal with that is to basically say, right, you can put up your Cyrillic string at the same time, so any contention is dealt with through that public comment process and through the whole process we have to deal with that. But the date that you go live with that Cyrillic string might be different. But you've had the opportunity to... No, we're not. No. What? Yeah, we will. Yeah, there was no one else. Yeah. Because it might...
But at the same time, if I
create the string.football, that blocks someone getting .football later. I mean, it's not that dissimilar. The only issue that Carrie's saying is if I'm restricted, I'm saying you can't be in this round because you're an IDN, and that's the issue. And so the way to overcome that is say, yes, you can be in the round in terms of being considered in terms of the string conflicts, the misleadingly similar. But you may not be able to go live until the technical work.
Exactly. So there's a conditionality there.
Yeah.
That there are technical issues that are being resolved as this round is open.
Yes.
But because the outcome is uncertain, there are details attaching to stored strings that will not be identical to the display version.
Yes.
That puts you in some sort of a, or actually, from any conflicting strings. If there's an ASCII string and a Cyrillic string that appear in this round,
either
of them gets put forward until.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. No, that's certainly exactly right. That's exactly right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Anything else from the audience?
I would like to ask maybe Tino. In the work plan you have right now for this issue, do you have any moments where you need input from the GNSL Council, or do we have to wait for the output for the testing and all the protocol before the discussion whether we launch a PDP or not?
Well, on the technical test, I don't have a particular need for input from the GNSO Council. Although vice versa, the IDN President's Advisory Committee have asked if they could provide input to the GNSO Council as they do their policy decisions. And for that purpose, Bruce, I know you don't have the date yet, but we're inviting Bruce to come to the next IDN President Advisory Committee meeting to talk a little bit about policy processes and so forth, and in particular what's being decided upon today in this group. But from the something from the GNSO to the technical test, I don't see a need for that. No, it's a technical oriented project only, and the participants of the advisory committee have been told to keep in mind to keep policy matters out of the technical test.
So the president advisory committee is assuming that the NSO council may be discussing policy issues related to IDN while the technical testing is on.
Yes, because the members of the President Advisory Committee for IDNs have a broader interest in IDNs than just from a technical standpoint, so they would like to offer their expertise to the GNSO Council in terms of the policy development that at some point is going to be kicked off.
Okay, any other comments? Okay, well, I suggest we have a break then for about
one of these movable 10 minutes. But really, I think we're pretty much finished for the day. But what I want to do is just recap what the next steps are. And